Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Take the blame for the audio quality on the last show, even though you were enjoying yourself down in Bradenton, Florida, and it really should have been your fault, but then I screwed up on the back end with my audio and abandoned you to have to work on it because I was too busy. So the whole thing's on me. I apologize. I'm an ass. How are you, Craig?
No, man, it's definitely not on you. The one thing that I kept on asking people down in Bradenton, people that live there, players that were down there, you know, what's the cell phone and Wi-Fi quality like down here? And they're like, I don't know who's in charge of it, but they're like, it's absolutely terrible. I mean, I'm sitting like next to the router and still was freezing the entire time. So if anybody listens to it, and Chris was pretty much the entire second half of the episode, that's because Chris probably didn't know when I was talking, when I wasn't talking, because my lips weren't moving. It was goofy, man.
Yeah, I would just skip that show. There's a lot of stuff that you may have talked about in that show we might circle back to, because you were there. I mean, you were there from morning until late afternoon on the field, watching the players, looking at the prospects, talking to people, gathering information. You know, you were putting in the work. You were not somebody that was down there having a beer, sleeping late, showing up for an hour and a half and then hoping to glean information off of other people. You were more the person that was right there in the trenches, learning everything about what was going on. And that's why I commend you. And that's why I think when people check out Bucks in the Basement, they get good information from Craig. I don't know what I want to get into first, though. I'd like to get into the acquisitions, because I dig the Michael A. Taylor signing. I could say some interesting things about Domingo Germán, but both of them are a filled need that makes sense for a team that is restricted by a cheap owner. When you have to dumpster dive, you have to take a chance on Domingo Germán. When you have to dumpster dive, you wait until pretty much the end of spring training until you're the best option for a Michael A. Taylor. And maybe we start with him, because I think he is getting overvalued a little bit by people who will say, really good defensively, look at these numbers here, and I'm going to take his average from a couple years ago and pair it with the home runs from last year, and then look at his defense in his prime, and that's what we got. And that's not what you have. I do think it's possible you'll get the power, because for a guy to let his average drop like he did last year, but add home runs, that indicates to me that he changed something in his approach. So you may get that. I'm more excited, though, about a professional baseball player standing in center field, putting Brian Reynolds in right, where I think he's better suited, moving Jack Sawinski to left, where he's better suited. It takes your entire outfield, and by adding him, makes it a better outfield defensively. And you have a guy who's a pro, and I think that we've said this many times, professional baseball players should be on the roster in the starting nine, and these other guys that are trying to make the team, these prospects, have to find a way to fight their way in there. And I like the fact that he's on the team because of that.
I agree with you, Chris. I mean, the two things that I went to, I mean, I know there's stuff out there about his like outs above average and stuff from last season. I also looked at the defensive runs saved as well. And you see like a huge bump in 2021. You know, that would be the year that he won the Gold Glove. 19 defensive runs saved. 2022, 19 defensive runs saved, both times in Kansas City. Last year, you know, the outs above average was still a top 10 center fielder in Major League Baseball. Defensive run save was down to about 5. Still, you know, a very solid, it's an upgrade over, you know, anybody that we were going to put in that position or platoon in that position. We saw his OPS, you know, jump up above 700. The more the things was that I think it was like 90 OPS plus in 2022 and then like 94 in 2023. Definitely did add some power. He was interviewed on the broadcast a couple days ago and did discuss a little bit about, you know, discovering some power. And they never will call it selling out for power. They'll always say, I discovered some power. I mean, in essence, a guy who, you know, for his career strikes out around 30% of the time, has gone as high as I think like 33, 34, never really walks above, you know, 7-8%. You're going to have some frustrating times with him at the plate. Will be a more than serviceable, will be a good, bordering on great, not the elite glove that we've maybe seen in the past, but the potential is there for all of that. What this basically means is that that kind of that right field battle that was going on, you know, the Pirates had acquired Edward Olivares in the offseason from the Royals for a lottery ticket because they were trying to clear some 40-man space. I mean, Olivares had a good season in Kansas City. It's nothing to, like, you know, slouch about, but kind of seems to be off of a little bit of a slow start here. Joshua Palacios dealing with a lower body injury and then succumbing to the flu that has been finding its way around Pirate City and Bradenton amongst the players. Who knows if he's going to be geared up enough to even, you know, start off of the IL to begin the season. You have Billy McKinney, farmhand from the Yankees, once again acquired. I think that one was for international bonus pool space. They could sign a catcher. Has had a really good spring training as a guy that can move all over the outfield. I could maybe see him kind of finding a spot. It was weird that they brought Kanan Smith and Jigba back. But it, in essence, it would be a guy fighting for the fourth or fifth outfield spot because I believe Connor Joe will still be getting some time out there. So if that's what it is, it's a guy fighting for a fourth or a fifth outfield spot as opposed to a third and a fourth professional baseball player. That's something, Chris, that we've always talked about having in the lineup, especially with, you know, the amount of young kids that they do start on this team is guys that will be, you could put them out there and you can look at them and say, okay, that's a professional baseball player. You know, Michael A. Taylor over the past three seasons has the war of what would be, you know, bordering on and sometimes over a regular starter in Major League Baseball, like 1.5, 2.5 war. So, yeah, I mean, good signing makes the team better. That's what you want to see happen. Yeah, I don't think there's much else to say about that. I was a little bit down on it when we were talking about beforehand, but as I got talking, I'm like, you know what? I kind of like this move.
Well, it's a interesting move, too, because they got him at $4 million. And, like, I felt like he was asking for more. That's why he'd been holding out this whole time. If he was only $4 million, I am surprised that other teams hadn't snagged him up to this point. He has value in Major League Baseball. At $4 million, it's a great price for a guy that can come in and play really good defense for you. And he doesn't need to bat ninth. Like, look at his stats. He's either going to hit 250 or so and come in just under league average with his OPS plus and his OPS. Or he's going to lower the average and knock out 20 bombs. And there's a spot in the lineup, I mean, not up at the top of it, but there's a spot in the lineup for a guy like that when he provides defense. Now, let's talk about Herman, because this is some tricky stuff here. And I kind of want to preface this a little bit so you understand where I'm coming from while I'm talking about it. Because I think whenever you're talking about a guy who has a history like Domingo Herman, who, you know, has clearly some issues with alcoholism, and it just seems that way, looking at his rap sheet and the stories and all these issues, and then a domestic violence issue. You know, if I say anything positive about him, somebody's going to get angry. So I want to preface this with the idea that if you haven't been paying attention to the show, I'm currently in the middle of a divorce here. because of a domestic violence issue that happened in my house while I was not here. And there's alcohol involved in it. There's all these issues. And for the safety of the children, I went through this divorce. I'm going through this divorce. And I have all of them living with me. They're all with dad. In fact, only recently, with restrictions placed on the whole thing by the court, have they even had any regular visitation with mom. Okay? And the hope is, as somebody who was married to her for 2 decades, that she gets herself right, that they can have a good relationship with mom, and that everybody stays safe. So as I talk about this, I want you to understand, I am somebody in a household that has dealt with a lot of the issues surrounding Domingo Germán. And I'm also one of those people, though, knowing all of that, that believes that you don't just tell somebody they can't work because of the issue. That if the Pirates are willing to make sure that he is going to be getting the help he needs, it is a disease. If they are going to sit there and say, okay, here's your contract. We want you to stay sober. We don't want you causing any trouble. I mean, personally, I think bringing this guy on, especially if he makes the major league roster, there's got to be a guy that's with him at all times. You almost need a handler, like a translator, that's with the guy, okay? Because he's one slip up away from a major incident that is going to all of a sudden be in your clubhouse or affect your team or affect him, and he's gone. If you really want him around, you want him pitching, then you got to watch him, unfortunately. And this is the kind of player that most teams don't take a chance on because they can afford to go out and get the pitcher that Ben Cherington needs. If you're not happy with Germán being on the team, look at Bob Nutting. Because if Bob Nutting's spending enough money, if he's giving the budget to his general manager he should be giving, his general manager doesn't have to take this kind of a risk. And again, I'm not excusing anything that Germán did, okay? And he's got some serious issues that need to be looked at, okay? And I don't know exactly what happened that night with his wife, and I have no idea, because we weren't there. She seems to be supportive of him. Everybody seems to want to give him another chance. And this is going to be something the Pirates are going to have to watch throughout the year with him, especially if he ends up on their 26-man roster. It is an extra headache that the Pirates must have to get a really good pitcher if he's sober and on. I mean, this is a good pitcher. This is a guy who could, if he's sober, healthy, and ready to go, is in the top end of your rotation because he's shown that ability. And you are rolling the dice here and taking a risk because you can't afford a top-end rotation guy because your owner is cheap. So this is the route that the general manager is taking. I'm willing to give it a chance and hope that they're doing their due diligence and that there almost needs to be a handler around him at all times. You can't just like go on a road trip if he makes the team and then just be like, see you tomorrow, Domingo. Who knows where he's going to be before the night's over? Like, you almost have to be like, hey, this is your guy. He's sticking you like glue. Welcome back to the majors.
Yeah, because the one thing that I did read on this, Chris, was that John Parato did a nice article on this, you know, addressed all of the issues and also spoke with, you know, some of his former teammates, coaches, different stuff, you know, didn't name any of them. But it sounds like some of the stuff that, you know, Ben Cherington and company found out as well, because they spoke with him. They spoke with his wife. They spoke with him and his wife together. They spoke with the MLBPA. They spoke with former teammates, former coaches, anybody they could concerning the situation. And I believe a lot of those stipulations that you're talking about, you know, have to be in there. But from John Parato, it's just basically like this guy is a giant teddy bear. 99% of the time when he is drinking, he's an absolute monster.
Well, that's how most alcoholics are.
Yeah.
That's how most alcohol. I mean, trust me, again, going through it over here. All right. And just the understanding of what it is like. And look, if you tell the alcoholic a lot of times, we're going to be testing you X amount of days, the alcoholic with some sort of a restriction or goal or, oh man, I could lose it all, is more likely to try to be good. You know, they're more likely to admit to themselves, you know, if I'm around it, I can't stop myself. And so if they know there's no consequences to it, or they think they can get away with it, trust me, they're going to justify in their mind right away, I can be good tonight. I won't have that much. And then all of a sudden they're off to the races. So it really will be. I mean, that's a great story to hear from the Pirates, but that 1% of the time when he is a monster, you have to treat it as he almost isn't in complete control of that. And you're going to have to make sure that he understands these are the things we expect from you. They're different from what we expect from the other players. These are the ways that you'll be treated, and these are the consequences in advance for if something happens. All right? You need to work at it every day. And you got to watch him. This is 162 games with 81 of them on the road. Okay? And the road for a baseball team is fraught with temptation. And so it will be, it's not impossible. I mean, the first guy I think of as a guy who was born in Chicago is Bobby Jenks. Bobby Jenks, the relief pitcher, who was a big story when the White Sox won in 2005, went on to pitch for the Red Sox, is now managing minor league baseball. And Bobby was a guy who reportedly had some issues. And the Angels tried like crazy to get him on track, and it didn't work out. And the Sox picked him up off the scrap heap, and he had never pitched in the majors. It had never worked out for this guy. He was on his last leg. He was given his expectations. They put him down in the minors for the first half of the year. He was good. He stuck to the program. He was able to stay on the program. They brought him up. He was closing games in the World Series. He was a big factor on that run that team had. So there, and if you look at it, he's still in baseball. And he still went on for years after that, able to control the demons. So it is not impossible for a guy to go control the demons.
Absolutely. And Chris, like you said, I mean, and talking about like his performance, you know, on the field, a guy that, you know, since he's become a regular starter for when he was with the New York Yankees in 2019, we look at WHIP a lot, and that's the first thing I looked at with him. I mean, the ERAs weren't always great, but the WHIPs, 2019, 1.147, 2021, 1.180, 2022, 1.161, 2023, 1.077 across 108 innings. So as far as like you said, like, we wish that it wouldn't have to be that, you know, that they would actually go out and spend money on a Michael Lorenzen like we've talked about. I know we're not going to go out and pay $31 million like the Giants just did for Blake Snell, but even giving a guy like $10 to $11 million or something. But, I mean, if he is on the mound and if he makes, you know, the major league team, and he pitches like he's always pitched. I mean, like you said, you are getting that potential top of the rotation arm that we have been calling for with Mitch Keller at one. I mean, even though Martin Perez has looked really good.
Oh,
so
he's
far
above Perez.
Training has looked.
He's above Perez. If he's on, he's the second best pitcher on your staff. Easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's right there. He's right there with Keller at the top of your rotation. If he's on, if he's healthy, and if they can keep him sober, he is a lottery ticket is essentially what he is. And what you hope here is that if he understands consequences, if he understands boundaries, and if the team is watching him, not only can you get something like that out of him, but you may turn the guy's life around. And look, if he slips up this year, I'm going to be the first one to sit there and says, now release him. You gave him a chance and he couldn't release him. Right? I would be the first one. We get a report that he goes and ties one on and attacks his wife again. I don't care how much she tells me that it was just a mistake and it will never happen again. I'll be like, nope, this guy is a habitual and I don't want him on my team. And so it's got to be short leash expectations. This is what we want from you. Mess up and you're gone. And then you kind of cross your fingers and you hope the guy is in the right point in his life where he's finally able to be rehabilitated enough that he gives you something out there on the field. But again, I go back to the fact that you don't even have to deal with this mess without Bob Nutting as your owner. Okay? If later on this summer, as a Pirates fan, you're disappointed in something that Domingo Germán does and how it makes your team look, and you feel icky about it, look no further than the owner who has forced the general manager to get creative to put a Major League Baseball team on the field.
Absolutely, Chris. Like I couldn't agree with you more. And like I said, we'll just have to see kind of how this plays out. I mean, at this point in time, I mean, anybody that they sign right now, it would be tough for them to, you know, kind of get their workload up to be able to, you know, jump right into the starting rotation. The Pirates also signed Eric Lauer, I believe, since we've recorded. And he's another guy, you know, on a minor league deal. Some of these guys that, you know, would have more than likely gotten major league deals had they signed earlier, and whatever reasons there would be for any of that. He's another guy that probably wouldn't be built up to a starter, but it doesn't mean you won't see him or either one of those in the rotation. And I like having, you know, a lot of this veteran depth down in AAA and guys that have performed well, you know, within the past couple of years. I mean, Eric Lauer last year had one of his worst seasons as a professional pitcher, but was kind of injury riddled when he was pitching well before that, you know, and wasn't hurt in 2021 and 2022. He's a guy that you would not be upset to have in your rotation. So I definitely do like having that. Just because a lot of the Pirates pitchers that they have lined up right now, you don't know exactly what you're going to get at the major league level from them. With a Luis Ortiz, a Quinn Priester, a Jared Jones, Rowanzi Contreras, who has not looked great.
Who's your five? Who's your five right now? If you right now could make the decision as your five breaking camp, who would it be?
I mean, it is, I mean, the top three are easy for me. Mitch Keller, Martin Perez, who I, you know, just reported and talked about how he was pitching well. I did get to see him on the backfields when I was down there in an exhibition game. Because the one thing you'll notice when you're watching spring training, you're like, I haven't seen this guy for a few days, you know, longer than that 5-day stretch. A lot of times when they travel to like Lakeland to play the Tigers, they travel up to the Braves, they travel the whole way up to Dunedin. A lot of the regulars don't travel. They'll play a backfields game and they're playing against, you know, professional players. So Martin Perez went out there and threw about 75 pitches in an exhibition game. Still looked good there, has looked good when you've seen him on TV or at least on the radio. Marco Gonzalez, health is going to be a big thing for him. He's your three. The four right now, four and five, I mean, I say Luis Ortiz. Luis Ortiz, as much trouble as he had last year and struggled through and got sent down to the minors, of the three guys, Quinn Priester, Luis Ortiz, and Rowanzi Contreras, who struggled last year, I felt like Luis Ortiz always looked the best with stuff. Priester's had a good spring training, performed pretty well in AAA last year, got shelled in the majors. So for me, it's kind of between him and Jared Jones, and I'm having like a hard time making a decision on that. I mean, I know a lot of people's minds are already made up because Jared Jones has 11 innings. I'm not sure he's even allowed a run yet. His last outing against a Braves stacked lineup, or pretty stacked lineup, he went like four innings, four strikeouts, one walk, like one hit. So he's looked absolutely great. I did look back at, you know, his time in AAA last year. I looked at that stuff on Minor League News and Brews. I did a whole episode, Chris, on, you know, his games during when they had the automated balls and strikes in and when they didn't. He looked a lot better when, or he had better numbers at least, when they didn't have the ABS in place. He did have a 1.800 whip in August in Indianapolis. If I'm leaning right now and it's like feet to the fire, I am going to keep like Jones on like a, he's going to be like when you're like going on a flight and you're the person who's sitting there. I don't fly that much. And everybody knows why now, because I was stuck in Chicago for 7 hours by missing my connector. But what's it called when you're like on deck for a flight? You're in reserve or something. I can't remember what it's called.
I standby. You're on standby.
I would have Jared Jones on standby for something. But if he makes the rotation, I wouldn't be upset. If he doesn't make the rotation, I would understand.
So here, let's look at this rotation, what you've just said, okay? And then let's think about the evolution of the rotation in just the first couple months of the season, where even if a guy doesn't make it coming out of camp, he looked good. He's a young rookie who's getting close. He's a high-end prospect like Paul Skeens. Let's throw him in there as well, okay? Let's take Jones and Priester and Skeens. And then let's look at a guy like Domingo Germán. And look at those four guys, and then look at Keller, Perez, and Gonzalez, who you're sure about. And I don't even think Ortiz, unless he gets off to a big start, is pitching for this team in the rotation by mid-June. Because there's too many names there that I think are very close. And you could, if things go really well for the Pirates, okay, you could see Germán up towards the top of that rotation along with Keller. You could see Perez kick down to the three spot. And you could see two of those young guys that I just mentioned out of the three pitching in that five-man rotation, and a Gonzalez rotated out of the rotation, which has happened to him before in his career, where all of a sudden he becomes the swing man. Okay? That's how you know you had a big season if something like that happens. And it's entirely within the realm of possibility after looking what Priester and Jones have done up to this point and the potential of Skeens. Right? I mean, isn't that possible? And you add in Germán, who, if he has it together, this could be a very interesting staff before we get to the All-Star break.
And Luis Ortiz, if he goes to the bullpen, it's definitely not a lot of people will see that as kind of like a failure. But when you get a rotation and stuff gets together, we've talked about this before, Chris, guys that end up in the bullpen are to some degree failed starters. His stuff profiles as a reliever, especially if he's using his two best pitches. And one thing I definitely do want to say about Jared Jones, and it kind of goes in the same vein as Paul Skeens. Jared Jones 2 years ago pitched 122 innings. Last year pitched 126 innings. Paul Skeens is right around that amount for how much he pitched between LSU and, you know, the 6 2/3 innings he pitched in professional baseball. We talked about, you know, them possibly doing what they did to Rowanzi Contreras a couple years ago, where he would be up, and then in the middle of the season, they send them down to the minors, almost kind of like shut them down for a couple weeks, have them build back up so they're able to finish the season. And I would kind of see Jared Jones in a similar vein. The one thing about Jared Jones that it doesn't scare me, I shouldn't say, that's the word that popped in my head, but he is a hard thrower. And when I say a hard thrower, he doesn't have the biggest frame. He's not the biggest guy. He is pumping like up over 100, 101 miles per hour. And when you watch him pitch, it seems like he is putting every ounce of his being into a pitch. And the same, like with Paul Skeens, it doesn't look that way because Paul Skeens is like 6'6" and 250 pounds. I mean, so they're two totally different pitchers, but I could see Jared Jones kind of wearing out. And we've talked about the importance of to a pitcher, because pitchers have said that to us. We've read about it. You know, kind of Matt Capps had said that to me in an interview previously, is you want to finish that season. So if you want to be competitive, it's not saying that you don't start Jones up here, because his innings have looked more like a starter. He pitched 4 innings his time out there. But then I also read an article, Chris, recently that is talking about like almost like treating pitch counts like Little League. It's not even looking at innings pitched. It's looking more at pitches thrown. And we are seeing guys build up. Like we see a Marco Gonzalez, Martin Perez, you know, Mitch Keller throwing up over, you know, 50 pitches in an outing. Jared Jones going up. So they are building him up and they're giving him that chance. I just, you know, the big thing for me is a lot of people say, and have just kind of thrown it out and said, you know, if he doesn't perform well, you can just kind of send him back down. And that worked for Grayson Rodriguez last year. But we also saw, you know, Mitch Keller come up and then get sent back down and not be able to, and gets bring back up and sent back down. And it took him so long. So that's where, like, I don't know. It's not trying to be overly cautious, and it's not saying that it wouldn't work if you, you know, started him out and then if it wasn't going well, send him back down. Like, every single player is different and bounces back differently. He could be a Grayson Rodriguez and come back and have a great second half of the year after being sent down. He could be a Mitch Keller and it could take, you know, 3 years for him to figure stuff out. So I would be okay if he was in AAA, but I wouldn't be upset. And I mean, I wouldn't be, I don't know if he was in this.
Well, here, think about this way. What if the decision that Cherington has to make is more along the lines of, which one of these young pitchers do I want to start the season with? Which one do I want to slow play in the minors so that when that first young pitcher wears out, the other guy's coming up and taking his place? The idea of looking at that grouping of pitchers that I talked about, these younger guys, and saying, well, one of them's going to help us get off to a good start, and one of them's going to show up later on. Because I can't, and I can make myself one hell of a pitcher in one of those rotation spots. And maybe two of them are up in the back end. One of them's here and it starts. That guy slowly gets shut down or needs a break or something like that. But that's when the next two are ready. Because I'm going to have an injury and I'm going to have to, I mean, they're, I think your pitching staff will look very different at the back end of this year. And if it's played correctly, and if this team can actually kind of get off to a start like we saw at the beginning of last year, it's going to mean a lot more because they're going to be in a race. Okay? And that's what the whole goal is here, right? The whole goal is to be in a race. And that, you know, they now have, in my opinion, looking at the fact of how Priester is pitching, how Jones pitched, knowing that Skeens could probably be here, it's possible, during the year, okay, and adding Herman and wondering to yourself, if this guy can stay on track, what could he be? There's a little bit of depth now. Even with Lauer, there's a little bit of depth now. There's some arms that are sitting down there. They're gearing up for the idea of, we're going to start the season with this group and we're going to end the season with this other group. And it works out really well if the rest of the team clicks. They should have enough arms and enough ammunition to make a run at the postseason.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to have to talk about fielding, and we talked about the outfield a little bit, but a lot of pitching focus here. But in essence, like, pitching kind of leads the team, because a lot of people will talk about, like, where we were offensively in April last year. I mean, look at the number of quality starts that they were getting, like, in a row. So, I mean, the pitching kind of, like, it's like the catalyst and can be something that carries you over the edge. If you're not pitching well, man, it can get ugly pretty quick.
Listen, chicks dig the long ball, but pitching and defense wins championships. Remember that. I don't know who said that first. It's probably just my dad after a couple of years. But it was wise. It was very, very wise.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing.